Lessons learned from a natural disaster.
I found out that, you know, I really do care about the people around me a lot more than maybe I would have expected.
1 year after a flood that wiped out a town, planning for the future and rebuilding a community. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51% The Women's Perspective. Unless you've been in a natural disaster, it's really hard to understand its true impact. Whether it's Hurricane Katrina, Colorado wildfires, the drought of 2012, or the worst storm damage in years in Ohio, the people affected deal with the aftermath long after the news crews pack up and go home. In New York's Catskills, it's been just over a year since Tropical Storm Irene roared up from the south. Prattsville, a farm community in Greene County, was labeled by Governor Andrew Cuomo as the hardest hit in the region. It was basically wiped out when the Schoharie Creek jumped its banks, a torrent that experts say was equivalent to the volume tumbling over Niagara Falls, wiped out most of the main street. A year later, there's been some rebuilding, but I was stunned by the devastation that still remains. This week, I spoke with two women working to help rebuild Prattsville, women who say they now better understand the victims of other natural disasters. First, Kristen Tompkins. She's a teacher at the local school, and she's volunteered to work with planners and developers working on a blueprint for a new Prattsville.
FEMA had come in with their long-term recovery program people and had encouraged us to really kind of get together and lay out our plans, our thought process, and what we had envisioned as townspeople for our town. Long-term, yes, obviously getting people back into their homes is, you know, extremely, extremely important, and getting businesses back up and running. I mean, that's an essential part of our economic growth as well as stability. But, you know, also long-term, what were we looking for? What would we hope to gain? Because, you know, really, this is the time that, and I kind of said the same thing to my parents. My parents were flooded out in Main Street, and I said, you know what? We have to take the walls down. We have to take, you know, we have to gut the whole house. But now's the time to take a look and really say, you know what? I really didn't like that closet there anyway. To take a look and analyze what we had and really see what was best to come back exactly the same and what was best to come back in, you know, in a different form.
And I would assume that's a bit of a challenge when you try to convince your neighbors to go that route, because that means it's going to be a slower process.
With most of the people in town having to have that take that same route with their own homes, they were more open and willing to take a look at that and say, you know what, maybe that wasn't the best place for this, or maybe we should do things this way, or you know, something that we've always wanted and really never had would be this, and maybe now would be the time that we'd be able to find some support and assistance in getting something like this. One thing that comes to mind is a community health and wellness center type of thing. We don't really have a place in town that, you know, if we wanted to have a meeting, let's say we wanted to have a knitting club or, you know, something like that, or a yoga class, there's really no place in town to have that. So maybe now's the time to kind of look at a place that we might want to have that and have it be multifunctional in a way that, you know, maybe it's going to house a emergency warning system, something more than just our fire siren. I have lived here most of my life. I did move away shortly after college and worked in advertising and communications in Manhattan for a while. But then, you know, when it came time to raise my family, this is where I wanted to be. This is my home. I couldn't imagine, you know, having to interview somebody to watch my children and not really know who that person was, you know. So this was where we wanted to be.
What changes do you see happening in Prattsville as a result of the fact that it was pretty much wiped off the map?
I see a renewed invigoration, if you will. This really, many people have seen this as an opportunity, and they fought to get back on their feet, but they really, they're fighting hard to make it better, bigger and better than it was. We have one of the largest employers in town, Jim's Great American. They have decided to expand and actually build a Prattville Plaza and part of their parking lot. And, you know, and they purchased additional land, and they're putting in like a strip mall type of thing. Just because they've seen that other businesses may have lost their buildings and they need a place to go now. And from these town meetings that we've had over the course of the last year, there's been a lot of interest in things like, you know, a gas station. We used to have gas stations in town, but now we have none. Young's Agway in town, they, I'm sure you probably heard stories of them. They are one of the families that they literally were on top of a shed and were almost washed away. They fought to get back on top of the shed, and they sat there for hours with their dogs and their family holding on to mulch bags that were giving them traction on this metal roof as the water was around them. Their business was washed off its foundation, but they put part of it back, and they're building better, and they were taking this opportunity to really, you know, this is what we had before, and we may have been limited, but you know what, let's take a look and see what we need here and bridge that gap.
Kristen, what do you think when you see natural disasters elsewhere now? I'm sure you look at things differently than you did before you were in one.
Yeah, you know, you've always felt horrible for the people involved, but you never really had, I never really had a full understanding of what it was like. You know, you hear people say, oh, it was like a war zone. And it really was, you know. And as these natural disasters are occurring everywhere, we sit here and I cry for them, because I now understand, I can get what they're going through. You know, the paperwork that you need to fill out and the hoops that you need to jump through to get help. Even just the decisions of, well, should I salvage this or should I just get new? I mean, at some point, it's just so excruciating to even think about one more decision. You know, that's a long road, and you just feel so horrible for people as they're just starting out.
Kristen Tompkins is a Prattville, New York native, a teacher, and a volunteer in Prattville's rebuilding plan. If you'd like to help out or learn more, visit the town website at prattsville.org/rebuilding. Up next, using the arts to help heal a community and reclaiming New Orleans one recipe at a time. If you missed part of this show or want to hear it again, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1212. New York's Catskills are just one of many areas that have been hit by natural disasters in the past years, and how one little rural town is working to rebuild after being wiped out by a flood is a microcosm of a story that's playing out in Japan, in Louisiana, from communities damaged by volcanoes, tornadoes, tsunamis, and hurricanes. Nancy Barton lives part-time in rural Prattville, New York, and teaches art at NYU in Manhattan. For her, the devastation left by Tropical Storm Irene uncovered bigger issues in her community, which she's been inspired to try to address.
Prattville is a really poor township. I believe it's one of the poorest townships in New York State. And that really makes a big difference in terms of how people can rebuild. The community here is amazing. I mean, people have nothing, and they will come out to support their neighbors like nobody's business. The government has not been incredibly helpful. You know, in the wealthier towns, it's not such an incredible problem. If you have, you know, grants that require you to put out your money and get reimbursed, people can afford to do that. But in Prattville, I think a lot of people have not been able to afford things like building materials. We've had great volunteer labor, hundreds of people last summer, but you know, skilled carpenters are hard to come by. And so a lot of things have been, you know, really taking a while. I mean, last month they had a pie auction where people in the community who already have very little are going to bake pies, and their neighbors are going to buy them to help people rebuild. I bought four pies. It was incredibly moving. I teach at NYU 3 days a week, and I've been living up here about half-time for 10 years. And I'm an artist, and I hadn't really come up here to be involved with, you know, other people. I really came up to have a sanctuary and you know, work on my own projects. But as I started going to the meetings, you know, after the flood, I realized that there were problems that were from the flood, and then there were problems that pre-existed the flood. And one of the problems that came up a lot was that young people in the town really don't have any place to congregate. There is no public space. I mean, let alone the fact that there is no health care, there is no community center, there's, you know, there's just no movie theater. I mean, there's nothing that, you know, people in larger cities take for granted. And so I, being an educator, thought, well, I'm not really good at doing drywall and plumbing, but I could actually help people to put together a kind of arts-based community center that would be a kind of hangout for younger people and perhaps older people alike. Immediately, I got a property owner to give me a rental for $1 a year for 10 years. And I've been working with local residents and also New York University and some artists from the city who came up on residency, about a dozen of them, over the summer and worked with the community. And we did a really wonderful exhibition as part of the Mudfest project, which was like this huge festival, which a lot of people came to and was really wonderful. So it's a very bittersweet process. You know, people have heard of Prattsville who had never heard of it before. The community is lovely. I've heard of other communities, you know, where people really didn't get any support from their neighbors or their town government. I mean, people here did everything they could to help each other, but their resources are pretty limited. It's a kind of a thing that creates certain politics in America. You know, when people feel that they pay taxes even though they have very little income, and then, you know, they don't really know how to, you know, to fix things on their own. Now, the government has finally set aside some additional money for Prattsville. I hope that it makes enough of a difference.
Describe to me what Prattsville looks like right now, a year afterwards.
The main street of the town is really the only street in the town. It borders the Schoharie Creek. It's a charming town, and about half of the homes and businesses are still not functional. Some houses have been demolished already. There are some that are still waiting to be demolished over a year later, where porches have collapsed. The houses are obviously uninhabitable. There are danger. We had one major fire, so one house in one apartment building is a kind of smoldering ruin. You know, really a good portion of the main street in the town is still, you know, got a lot of houses off their foundations, a lot of houses where, you know, people cannot live and cannot return to. My understanding is about 200 people had to move out because of the flooding, and about 20-some have been able to move back.
Wow. So you are finding yourself living in one of the sites of a natural disaster. What has that meant for you? What have you found out?
Well, I found out that, you know, I really do care about the people around me a lot more than maybe I would have expected. And it really does sometimes bring out the best in people. And that's been very special. I'm in the the town in a different way now that I'm in the art center several days a week. And, you know, I'm seeing that, you know, people have really serious problems because of, you know, endemic poverty. You know, the river that comes through our town provides really a good portion of the drinking water to New York City. It drives me nuts when I hear people in New York Magazine say, oh, well, people should just move, you know, that town is, you know, could be flooded again. And I think, well, New York City was built in a place where there wasn't enough water for the people who live there, as was Los Angeles. I mean, no one is suggesting that they just pick up and move. You know, there are families here that have been here for, you know, many generations. The building I'm working on renovating is from the 1840s. And I think there's a history in America that is very special. I mean, I think of myself as a, you know, an anarchist or a leftist, but I find myself talking to people who are, you know, libertarians. I started a Facebook page for Prattsville Art just to meet the people in the community, and I see how the bitterness over the lack of public funding in rural communities has made them turn to, you know, political options that I don't think are really necessarily for the best for this town or any other. But I think people don't understand why they pay taxes and they don't have a place to go if they're sick or have an injury. They don't have any arts or community programming. They don't have, you know, any place to really to spend time together. And I think that is taken for granted in other communities in a different way. I think the arts can be a way to bring people together in tough times. And it is possible to bring people together through the arts and still retain their individuality without sort of suggesting that everyone has to agree on everything and that people who are different, you know, need to somehow sacrifice something of themselves. And I feel that one of the things that has happened here is, you know, I have an assistant who lives in the trailer park around the corner from the art center. She has a degree in art. She thought she would never be able to do anything with her art degree in Prattsville. And I was able to give her a small check, and she said it was the first money she had earned with her art degree. And, you know, that kind of thinking, that kind of expression and creativity that I've seen in the people here just over this one short summer makes me think that, you know, when people have a chance to think outside of the box, they really can think of a lot of things that will contribute to their community and even to the country itself. And I would love to see this kind of model of the arts and, you know, placemaking and art support be a part of the rebuilding of, you know, small towns across America, because the people are just incredible.
Nancy Barton is an artist and a teacher and director of the Prattsville Art Center. The center's Facebook page is at Prattsville Art Workshops. Many of the poorest residents of New Orleans lost everything in Hurricane Katrina, but what some miss most may surprise you. This is a food-loving town where treasured recipes are handed down for generations. After Katrina, you could see floodwater-soaked recipe cards pinned on clotheslines to dry. While many recipes and cookbooks couldn't be saved, Mary Stuckey reports not all were lost forever.
Shannon Jones is in the kitchen chopping celery for the chicken and sausage gumbo that's bubbling on her stove.
What we're doing is we're starting to saute the vegetables, the trinity. What we call the trinity is celery, bell peppers, and onions.
Jones loves her new house, rebuilt on exactly the same spot as her old house, which was destroyed when the levees broke. When the floodwaters receded, she tried to rescue her recipes, but all was lost.
It was the first thing I thought about was my cookbooks, my own personal notes. I took notes while I was being taught to cook this gumbo. took me years to remember that I was supposed to be putting liquid smoke in it.
Losing their recipes was one big part of the disaster. Here, food is life.
We go out to lunch and sit around in restaurants at lunchtime discussing where we're going to go out to dinner. When my son and I go on vacation, he always says, "That was fun when we're getting on the plane to come home. Now let's go home and eat."
That's New Orleans, says Judy Walker, food editor at the Times-Picayune newspaper. Almost immediately after Katrina, Walker began getting requests for recipes destroyed in the flood. When she couldn't find a recipe herself, she put a notice in the newspaper.
I had two people ask me for the exact same recipe on the same day for that sweet potato corn and jalapeno bisque. You know, things kept happening like that.
So while the city was being rebuilt, Walker engaged in her own reconstruction project. She began collecting recipes unique to this melting pot of Creole, Cajun, Italian, African, French, and German cuisine. The cookbook she eventually co-authored, called Cooking Up a Storm, was published 2 years ago.
I realized that this project wouldn't have been needed had this horrible disaster happened elsewhere. But in New Orleans, because we specifically have this culture of food, because we have these specific ingredients, we needed our recipes back. You know, The Joy of Cooking is a wonderful cookbook. Doesn't have a lot of crawfish recipes in it.
In Walker's cookbook, there's crawfish and corn chowder, crawfish in saffron sauce, crawfish pie, even Jerry's crawfish bread.
We have always had a huge number of desserts and sweets based on cane sugar. Of course, we have the famous pralines. They're very sweet. They're very good. I cannot resist them.
And you say praline, not praline.
Oh, no, not praline. It's a praline here. And it's crawfish, not crayfish.
And it's roux, a mix of fat and flour, an important ingredient in gumbo. Shannon Jones toasts her roux to a deep chocolate color, stirring for nearly an hour. Gumbo is one of the first things Jones made after Katrina. It was a source of comfort to her and the friends who sheltered her after the storm.
So many of us needed a place to just kind of gather. People were either living in tiny apartments or commuting from Baton Rouge or living in trailers. And we had these dinner parties every single Wednesday.
Now, more than 5 years later, they're still gathering every week to cook and eat together in each other's homes. Finally, it's my turn to sit down with a big bowl of Shannon's chicken and andouille sausage gumbo.
Mmm. Oh, that sticks to your ribs.
Mmm.
Mmm. Oh, smooth, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's that velvetiness that comes from the roux. This gumbo is a classic. You just keep making it till you figure out what you're forgetting each time.
But if she can't remember, Shannon Jones can find 6 different recipes for gumbo in Cooking Up a Storm, dedicated to citizens of the Gulf Coast. The hurricane and floodwaters may have destroyed their homes and leveled their communities, but these Louisianans are determined to make sure it didn't wipe out their culture. For the World Vision Report, I'm Mary Stuckey in New Orleans.
This story comes to us courtesy of the World Vision Report. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.